Blog Talk Radio.
This is my right, a right given by God to live a free life, to live in freedom. Talking about
Welcome to the Conservative Torch radio program right here on WGRN, the Westchester Guardian Radio Network. It is our second maiden voyage, if you want to call it that. I am joined in studio here from the Westchester Guardian, Hezyaris. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you very much for being here. And around 7:30 or so, we should having our consigliere call in, as I call him. Larry Allison should be going to the program around 7:30 and should stay on with us for the better part of the show. He's been involved in the political world for many, many years, many, many decades. Hint, hint, Larry. Anyways, so we should have a good time with that.
Way.
He goes back ways, ways he goes back. So we're going to ask...
You put enough candles on the cake.
No, you can't. You really can't. We're going to ask him what it was like during the Benjamin Franklin days and see what he thought. Those are very good days. We're going to see if Ben Franklin really was what they said he was. We are just kidding with you, Larry. We're looking forward to you calling in. Obviously, very well known in the local market, so we're going to get some feedback on him from a lot of issues dealing with the local spectrum as well as the national spectrum with Barack Obama as well as with the Congress. So we'll see what happens when he calls in around 7:30 or so. And if you would like to be part of the program, please do so at 310-982-4137 or at 877-674-2436. Again, this is one of the many amenities we have been granted on this new format with Blog Talk Radio through WGRN is call-in capability, and I'm highly looking forward to receiving feedback from the faithful listeners out there, so please do so. So let's get right to it. So many things going on right now. Again, I know we've had a 2012 segment on the program for the better part of the year now, towards the end of the program, but now I'm starting to realize that this phenomenon of this election has become so huge and so prominent that I cannot just limit it to just the last 15 minutes of the program. So from now on, we're going to implement it throughout the show. You have a topic. Very smart move, right, Hezzy? If you have a topic, if you have a comment, a question, a concern, anything about any of the candidates, anytime throughout the show, we're going to open up the phones. We're going to open up everything. No topic is restricted with the 2012 race. So the 2012 segment is basically the whole show mixed in with every other issue going on right now with the economy, with world politics, with the global military issues going on throughout the Middle East. So it's mixed in. So please don't feel like you have to wait for the last 20 minutes of the show to call in about something with 2012, with the election related. Anytime throughout the show is more than welcome. Please do so. Now, before we move on to any of the other issues, I do want to get to something that the past 2 weeks – I haven't had an opportune moment to have my tribute to the September 11th attacks. The first show back from the summer break, when I was still with WICR, I had the show all ready to go. I had the tribute all ready to go, and then the show didn't air at all. And putting aside the fact that the show was very well done, Larry was on the program that day, this tribute wasn't heard, and that really bothered me. And last week we were having, still trying to figure out the Blog Talk Radio format, so we couldn't get audio on the program, hence why there wasn't an intro, my usual intro last week, but there was this week. So I do want to take some time. I know it is almost a month past the 10th anniversary, but I feel it is never too late to honor these victims, and I feel it is never too late to give them the respect they deserve.
I second that.
Thank you, Hezzy. Thank you, Hezzy. So without further ado, I do want to play a clip for you that I put together myself. This is the 9/11 tribute from the Conservative Torch radio program. We will never forget. We will always honor. We will always remember. So please take a listen.
Into one of the World Trade Center towers.
When the plane began to fly toward the World Trade Center.
It does look like a nuclear winter in lower Manhattan.
It will be a high loss of life.
We are still picking up the pieces and trying to figure out exactly what happened.
It has to be of unparalleled proportions.
Officials are saying there was no warning of a likely terrorist attack.
Two hijacked airlines.
I was happening to look on the first tower and I actually saw people waving where the first plane crashed through, and then it was unbelievable seeing this second jet come crashing into the second tower. What is going on?
They can't take that away.
it was bombed during the Second World War.
Some of the casualties are in the collapsed building and buildings around the World Trade Center. I'm told that it's just a scene of rubble and utter devastation.
This country will rebound, and what can you say in a situation down? There's just not a lot we can say.
This is something that's affecting everyone directly.
I ask the American people to join me in saying a prayer for the victims and their families.
From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee,
I pray that God will give our leaders wisdom.
From the plains of Texas, from the sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston,
again, that was the 9/11 tribute from the Conservative Torch Radio program in honor of all of those victims who were lost by cowards who decided to attempt a disastrous evil against our nation. And we were able to overcome, and we're still overcoming, but we never forget what happened. And they tried to take us down, but they will never take us down. And that is the point. This goes across all party lines. This goes across conservatives, liberals, Democrats, Republicans, libertarians, any type of political belief you have, whatever you align yourself to be. When it comes to something like this, I could care less. Again, the show is obviously conservative-based, but in the end, we are all Americans, and I think nobody can disagree on the basic freedoms that we cherish and that we honor. And I'd like to say thank you to each and every one of our military members for what they have done in sacrificing and protecting this country from any and all evils that we currently face. So again, that was my tribute. That is the tribute from this program to the victims and their families. Moving on, I would like to state that obviously last week was, which didn't get a lot of recognition, that was my fault. There was a lot going on. In terms of the issues, Frank Venucci and Larry Allison were on the program. So I kind of overlooked the fact, didn't forget about it, just kind of overlooked that last week was the one-year anniversary of the program. September 30th, 2010, we made our debut show on WYCR Radio. And for the first year, we were on that platform through Iona College. And we had a lot of...
I wish you a happy birthday.
Yes, please do.
Okay, happy anniversary.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And so the program is 1 year old, and I couldn't be more thrilled with the way the reception I've been given by so many. So thank you, and I still seek to provide the best quality program, and I feel that is only going to become enhanced with WGRN. And once again, I thank Hezzy and all the people here at the Westchester Guardian for providing this form. Thank you very much. Thank you. So now, moving to the issues. As everybody knows, as a staple of this program, we start off every single show with an excerpt from our good old faithful Constitution. So I would like to do that right now. Article 7 of the U.S. Constitution. The ratification of the conventions of 9 states shall be sufficient for the establishment of this Constitution between the states, so ratifying the same. Done in convention by the unanimous consent of the states present this 17th day of September in the year of our Lord, 1787, and of the independence of the United States of America, the 12th. Now, I always seek, and I don't know about you, Hezzy, but I always seek to try and implement my views in line with the Founding Fathers and what they believed in, because I feel that we've gone so far astray from what this country used to be.
We don't remember what was said, we go astray.
And it's really a shame that nobody takes the time to realize this. And this movement, this great conservative, Republican, whatever you want to call it, this movement of freedom and individual responsibility, individual freedom and achievement is something that needs to be upheld and something that needs to stand the test of time. Because if not, we wind up being a place like China, which squashes individual freedom. If not, we wind up being
the Red Book.
Sorry?
They got the little Red Book that Mao Zedong gave them.
Right.
So I don't think they read it, actually. They were forced to read it.
Right.
They wanted to quickly forget it, and they did.
Right, right.
We weren't forced to do it, so we never learned ours. That really is a shame.
Right. But, you know, we had this opportunity to learn it. And we should learn our Constitution. We should read it. This is why one of the reasons why I read an excerpt from it every single show. It is this document, this collection of ideas that resonates freedom, that resonates responsibility, that resonates with individual achievement, is something that I think cannot be taken for granted. It's something that should be held to the highest regard. Now, I've gotten into arguments with several liberals who would want to talk about how the document is a living, breathing is a living and breathing existence. I disagree to many extents. But then I face the liberals who say, oh, you're talking about the Constitution as if it's the Holy Bible. Well, you know what? I'm not going to try and compare anything to the Holy Bible, but let's look at some type of comparison, shall we? The Holy Bible is seen as a set of laws and as a set of guidelines and a way in which you can form your life in a religious aspect. So now why couldn't we say the same thing from a political or a social aspect of the Constitution? I see a very knowledgeable comparison there in which it's pertinent and it works. But we are being run right now, this country is being organized and run right now by a set of individuals who don't really believe that, which is the problem. Hence the creation for shows such as this. But now, the first issue I want to talk about is, I know that Sarah Palin has decided not to run for office or seeking the 2012 nomination, and I, for one, could not be happier. I'm happier because I don't feel that she would have won at all. I don't think she would have won the nomination. Second of all, even if she didn't win the nomination, she would have completely been destroyed in the national election. I don't care what Barack Obama's poll numbers were, she has a very, very high disapproval rating.
Yeah.
And
I couldn't agree more. And she was right in surmising on her own that she would do better.
Right.
Engaged in support of or just involved in the whole process.
Right. And, you know, political pundits and political contributors such as her, whether they're with Fox News or whether they're with the political campaign, they can make a difference. Endorsements can sway an election. They can, I mean, you'd be surprised who somebody will vote for or not vote for based upon who endorsed them. And it's amazing to think that somebody's opinion can be held in such high regard, whether it's positive or negative. I've known people who voted for somebody because they were endorsed by a candidate. I've known people who didn't vote for somebody because they were endorsed by a certain candidate. So it really does shape a lot of where the election goes. Sarah Palin, you know, even though I would agree with her politically on many issues, personally she did not resonate. She didn't click with the American people. Initially she was seen as fresh, as different, as something outside of Washington, as somebody who can connect with the average citizen, and I agreed with all that. And to some extent I do agree with all that still, but the majority of people do not want her in office, and that includes Republicans. New poll came out that said, I believe, 30% of Republicans wanted her to run. That was it. And when your own party is against you in that sense, don't even bother. Save your money, save your time, save your energy, because it's not going to go anywhere. Has he any comments on that?
Well, I think you're right. I think she learned that she was marginalized by her party when she was chosen, practically from the very start. So she was diminished, and she was almost and yet she energized the team.
Right.
Right. And then yet they resented it. So somehow or another it never clicked when she ran her campaign. And then the media demonized her and tried to make her look foolish, and maybe they accomplished that. But I think what was so interesting about her, I didn't always agree with her.
Right.
But I respected her.
Mm-hmm.
I respected, you know, her place, her heart, where she was coming from. And I felt that she was really interested in America, and she was concerned about America. And this is her perspective. But at the end, she outwitted all the politicians who tried to minimize her.
Right.
And I think that she was clever enough to outwit them, and that they're angry to this day with regard to her conduct, because she showed them to be the fools that they are.
Right.
Because they shouldn't have toyed with her. And evidently, she survived. She wrote a book. They're envious of the money she made on her riding tour. And they just resent her somehow. They feel like she shouldn't have gotten this opportunity.
Right.
But evidently, she rose from, you know, she's one of the Americans who rose to the top. And she's going to stay there whether
she
they
will.
Like it or not.
She really will stay there. And it's something that, I mean, she is somebody who I feel will always be in the spotlight.
Absolutely.
She'll always be up there, and she'll always have a following.
Correct.
She'll always have a calling.
And she'll have something to say.
She'll always have a calling to do something. Right.
Yeah.
She'll always have an opinion on something, and she is a crowd generator.
Yeah.
She really is. But presidential material, not so much.
I don't think she hasn't shown herself to be that sort of material. But then again, you know, we have a lot of people who just want
right.
to meet
right.
the bar.
Well, sadly enough, we have one right now.
We have one right now.
We have one right now who just doesn't fit meet the bar.
That's the problem.
But, you know, and that is the problem. And, you know, I hear this argument time and time again that out of a nation of over 300 million people, Barack Obama is the best we can do to run this country for at least 4 years.
No, he's not. But interestingly enough, you know, the Republican Party, the Tea Party people, the conservatives, all the people, you know, who have something negative to say about Obama, that's all they have to say.
Right.
And they haven't spent the time. They haven't done the work. You know, they haven't done the homework.
Who, the Tea Party? Or?
Everybody who's opposed to Barack Obama, they need to formalize in their own head what the arguments are.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be able to come up with an answer and a response to everything that's said on the other side, and it needs to be valid. It needs to resonate with the country and the people. And you know what? There isn't anyone that should take it for granted that they can win by just kicking the man in the shins and minimizing him because he's reading a teleprompter.
Well, you know,
he does.
Well, you know, generally though, you know, normally,
you can become a better material. I mean, it's not funny. It's just that a lot of the people who stand there and claim to represent us are not doing such a good job.
Right.
And that's why Christie looked phenomenal, because he has an answer. But he also has ethics.
Right.
And he has an ethical compass that said to him, hey, I told the people in New Jersey I was going to served them
for four years. Right.
And he's going to do it.
He quote, in one of the news conferences, he was quoted as stating, whether or not you like it or not, you're stuck with me for 4 years.
That's what he said. That's the way
Which, you know what? It's true. It's blunt. It's honest. It's to the point. I want Chris Christie to run. I just did not want him to run now.
Well, I don't think he would have hobbled himself for no reason.
Right.
It's so difficult to launch a campaign.
Especially this late in the season.
Yeah, 3 months before he needs to get it all up and running.
Now, I do agree with you that, I mean, I'm a huge supporter and defender of the Tea Party movement.
I defend everybody.
But see, the problem is that the Republican Party, the conservative movement, has not formulated a significant leader, a counterpoint in terms of an image or a person to Barack Obama. I mean, we have a field right now that is wide open. Mitt Romney, obviously, in the lead. You have Rick Perry.
But Mitt Romney evidently can't get much traction.
That's the problem.
How many years is he going to keep going?
Exactly.
Where does he go to? 25-30%?
And you know,
it's not good enough.
It's not good enough. And Mitt Romney is somebody who can generate the pizzazz, if you will. He has the look. He talks like a leader. It's not. He talks like a leader. He looks like a leader. But in terms of actually being a leader, he's not gaining traction, as you said. Rick Perry's doing the same thing. He's faltering. There's no way Rick Perry wins this nomination. I will come out right now on this program at 7:26 at night on the Conservative Torch radio program and tell you Rick Perry will not be the Republican nominee for president. I can guarantee you that.
I agree.
You can lock it up.
Such good wisdom.
Oh, yeah, such good wisdom. You can take that to the bank, seal it, put it in the vault. Rick Perry, you will not see a President Rick Perry. I guarantee you that.
The question comes to mind is, like, why is it that you see this reality? How come you can do the simple equation? How come you can come up with a common denominator that says, no, this is not going to work?
Right.
And yet all the handlers that he's got, and all the other, you know, pundits and experts don't tell him. Do they just, they want the job and that's all that matters to them? Is it a job for them and they can't?
A lot of people run for this office for the popularity because they think it's a popularity contest. A lot of people run for political office, for name recognition. A lot of people run for this office because they want to be known. But when they get into office, they have no idea what they're doing. They screw up this country even more. This country is a lot worse off than it was 4 years ago when George W. left office, or 3 years ago, almost 3 years now that he left office. People want to complain about George W. Bush, how he increased our debt, he brought us into two wars. Let me ask every single American listening, do you feel this country is better off before January 20th of 2009? On January 19th of 2009, when the last full day George W. Bush was in office, does anybody think this country is better off than it was on January 19th of 2009?
It may be an unfair question.
How is that an unfair question?
Because you know, things have momentum. Once you get them to move forward, even in politics, then they continue to move. It's very, very unlikely to have been able to stop a lot of the momentum that began under Bush. I'm not blaming Bush, because it's not that I cared for him. I didn't find him that proficient in his job. However, the point is he wasn't there alone. He had a lot of partners.
Right.
And guess who those partners were? They were on the other side of the equation politically.
Well,
and I know the buck is supposed to stop with the president, but that's not good enough. We need people who are loyal to America and not just loyal to the party tenants. And that's what we don't have.
I can understand your point, but I would have to disagree because once Barack Obama ran on this platform of wanting to change everything, whether or not he could or couldn't have, he still ran on that platform.
Yeah, but that
first
change
point.
Is the change I could not believe in.
Absolutely.
It didn't make sense.
It did not make sense, but a lot of people thought it did. And they thought it was, because millions of people went out because of this hopey, changey crap that he was filtering through the American people.
Well, didn't Sarah Palin say something about
how's that hope and change thing working out for you? And it's true. There's another shirt with George W. Bush waving, saying, "Miss me yet?"
Yeah,
because you know what? Listen, George W. Bush was not the greatest president in U.S. history, but if Barack Obama's answer to fixing whatever George W. Bush started or whatever was starting under his watch, if Barack Obama's answer is to add more billions of dollars to the national debt, to increase our unemployment, to not put any significant jobs bill through that actually decreases the unemployment rating. On last week's show, we talked about how there were four different plans Barack Obama implemented over the past almost 3 years now. None of them have decreased the unemployment rate to the levels he said they would be at when he was running for office. None of them, and they won't, because he has no clue what he's doing. So everybody on the left can talk about how it was Bush's fault. You want to give Bush...
They've got to stop.
They have to stop.
The argument is not about Bush.
Right.
And the argument is really not even about Obama. The argument should be what's appropriate for America and what really works.
Right.
And what our politicians are not doing is they're not going to get into that fuzzy mode and they're all going to make love to one another. So we need for them just to do the right thing.
Right.
and they need to come to a conclusion of what's appropriate. So if they need to cut back on expenditures, then they should. And it shouldn't be a game where they toy with the public in the hope that they'll buy it and they'll give it more time. We don't have any more time left.
Right, we don't. We have no time. This country is going down the tubes fast. I hate to put it blunt, but that's my style. Everybody who's listened to me for the past year knows that that's my style. I tell it like it is. This country is going down the tubes fast, and something needs to be done. I do believe that our consigliere is calling in. So, without further ado, let's go to Mr. Larry Allison. Larry, are you there?
Carmine, how are you? Ezzy.
Larry.
How are you?
How
my
you
man.
Doing?
Good. Well, I'm very busy right now. I'm trying to arrange for the Port of Sand franchise for Occupy Wall Street. I mean, I this is going to be a moneymaker. But other than that, I'm all yours.
Okay, great. Well, listen, have you been listening to the first half hour of the show?
You have no Carmine, you have no sense of humor whatsoever. Do you know that?
And why is that?
I have no idea. You've got to loosen up.
Loosen up?
Yeah.
Why do I have to loosen up?
Never mind. Carmine, let's go on to more serious stuff besides the Port of Sand franchise.
Yes. Now listen. Can you? Bring,
yeah, okay.
I'm hearing a lot of rumors about Ben Franklin. Can you please tell me what was he really like?
He was a roué, as they used to call it in those days. That term is not used too much anymore. He was a man about town. He was very much of a check magnet, and I frankly learned a lot from him.
Oh, good, good. Now, moving on to a serious issue.
Okay.
We obviously, as you know, there's been so much going on right now with the president. There was an article out on Politico today in which he was quoted as saying that he's comfortable with raising taxes on the rich. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, how do you define the rich? I mean, we've had so many definitions of who's rich and who's not rich. There's 200,000, 250,000, which even the Senate is now walking away from because they realize, and especially Senator Schumer, is realizing that he'll put half the state of New York out of business if he does this. They play very fast and loose with the term rich, and just let me segue. This gives him also an immediate kind of affinity for what's happening down in Wall Street and some of these other demonstrations that are taking over, which is essentially a demonstration, as best I can determine, against rich people. I mean, I think when it's taken down to its most common denominator, that's what you find it will be. And the President of the United States is making common cause with this while he loads up his campaign coffers with largesse from the masters of the universe in the very center of the capitalist hell that these young people are protesting. So, if it wasn't so serious, I could laugh about it. I mean, it is the class warfare card is a card that I don't know whether it's a card of desperation or it's hardwired into the DNA of this president and the people around him, that they so believe that the world is, you know, this place or the haves and the have-nots, and that people that don't have through no fault of their own, it's because they've become victims. And I think that's the kind of ideology that has driven this administration. And on top of all of that, they're incompetent. So I mean, it's a deadly combination. They're ideologues who are not too good at what they do, and what's lost on them is their solemn responsibility under the Constitution of the United States to provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and make sure that the inalienable rights of all individuals in the United States are protected. So when I hear the rich thing, I mean, it's, you know, it takes me back to, you know, the Reign of Terror and, you know, the day they did Louis in. This is a getting to be a very tiresome kind of mantra. And the my generation invented this stuff. Okay, I mean, we were the original protesters, starting with free speech movement with out in Berkeley, and then the anti-Vietnam demonstrations. So you know, I this is like a remake of a movie that I've partly been in and partly seen. And I'm not, you know, I'm telling you, we were better at this than these guys are. I think that labor going in today, and in particularly in light of the cuts that Mayor Bloomberg just announced, labor going down there and making common cause and showing solidarity with the students is a very big mistake. Wall Street, you know, has a lot to account for, and I'm not going to defend it.
Larry, does it really surprise you that Mayor Bloomberg is, in one way or another, taking part in these rallies? I mean,
no, he's not taking part in these. I mean, Mayor Bloomberg, I think, is honestly. He did?
By going down there.
I have not heard that Mayor Bloomberg has gone down there. What I have heard is that Mayor Bloomberg thinks that the last thing I read. Now, if this has changed, then I'm behind the curve. That this was a, you know, kind of a nonsensical kind of effort that they're putting in down there, and it's certainly costing the city a ton of money in overtime, and it's threatening to get violent because the longer this goes on, the more destructive elements within the community of the left will come to bear, because they will, you know, pretty soon you're going to get, you know, having property destroyed, and there may be, and worse.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I wasn't aware. I mean, I actually was sympathetic with Bloomberg on this, because I think he was right. Now, if something happened, you know, that I'm not aware of, then,
you
know.
Larry, what have you heard has been the exact position of Mayor Bloomberg then? If you can clarify.
Just what I said. I mean, that's my understanding of what his position is. I don't think he's made any sympathetic statements. I mean, you know, listen, if somebody says people have the right to demonstrate, they have the right to peacefully assemble and everything, I can't argue with that. What's fair for the goose is fair for the gander. The Tea Party does that. I think it's as American as apple pie, and I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is in exercising my right of free speech and exercising my right as a free person is to question what the motives are and to try to have an intellectual debate with, you know, some of these people.
But, you know, listen, Larry, I was in the middle of this protest several weeks ago, unbeknownst to me, when I was just walking through the streets, and I found myself in the middle of a bunch of liberal, communist-hating people who wearing masks, wearing the V for Vendetta mask from the movie, holding up signs. And the sheer – and they talk about the conservatives and the Republicans having no compassion and all about violence.
Right.
This group
here
was probably one of the most violent groups I've seen. And being right in the middle of it, it was completely, first of all, very unorganized. You had people all over the place.
Yeah.
The police were scouring the area looking for anything. The police were flooding this area, trying to keep a hold of this crowd, because you had – the feel was in the air that at any moment this can turn violent.
And you've got people like Roseanne Barr in the background talking about beheading the rich. Filters down through the sediment and feeds this thing.
Yeah, Roseanne Barr wants to cut off the heads of the rich, but don't tell me that she didn't make a couple million dollars off of her TV shows.
Roseanne Barr is a victim of too much liposuction, and I think it's actually caused her to become demented, but that's another story. That's for another time.
But, you know, it's funny, though, that you have hypocrites such as Roseanne Barr who took full advantage of capitalism, took full advantage of democracy at its best.
Isn't that always the case, though? I mean, I'd like to take a poll down there and find out how many kids have trust funds that are down there. I'm not saying that sarcastically. I mean, these movements traditionally start with kids that are well-to-do because they have the time to do it. Kids that aren't well-to-do, that had to, you know, that have to work can't take time off to demonstrate. You're not going to find them down there because they're too busy trying to survive. I mean, you know, you're a kid that's worked all the way through college. I had to work all the way through college. It was only after college that I went to my first demonstration. I either had to go to work or I had to go to the demonstration. I went to work. So, you know, there's no small degree of irony and perhaps even hypocrisy in this demonstration. But it's clear that I think this is the leitmotif of the campaign to come. I think this is going to be and everybody, we all talked about this, we all predicted it. This was going to be the nastiest, dirtiest campaign.
Oh, it will be. And it's only going to get nastier once the nominee is picked, because now both parties can zero in on the candidate of their choosing. You have the Democrats. Right. The Democrats are skimming the field right now looking for who's going to be the nominee. They're attacking every single one of them. Just wait till the nominee comes out, then the attacks are really going to kick in.
Right, right. And today, Frank told me, Frank's in Washington and attending a Republican study group meeting, and he told me that Madeleine Albright and Jamie Gorelick have been appointed to the Defense Policy Board, why do I raise this in this particular context? I raise it because these are two old Clinton people. Jamie Gorelick is the architect, the person responsible for the so-called Chinese wall in the FBI between the counterterrorism section, the FBI, and the criminal division, which prevented them from sharing information which could have possibly thwarted the attacks on 9/11. And for them to be recycling these two, you know, sends up all sorts of signals, whether or not, you know, as to whether you know, Hillary is going to be vice president. You know, he's going to replace Biden, become the vice presidential nominee. It may be something, it may be nothing.
I had at one point believed that Hillary Clinton could challenge Obama for the nomination itself. But as time is progressing, I'm seeing that that's probably less and less likely the case, and I could very well see Obama picking her to replace Biden.
I think that he unites the Democratic Party by doing that, and I think he'll have to give up some autonomy as president. I think that'll be the Faustian bargain that he'll have to make. If that's true, I don't think the Clintons do anything for nothing, and you know, she become, you know, like a co-president without the title, and she'll have a portfolio which will be enormous, and he'll just sort of glide through his second term, and then she'll be the obvious candidate for the presidency in 2016. Now that to me is a very rational scenario.
Larry, you also have to look at the fact that by the time 2016 rolls around, we have to see if Hillary's going to have the stamina to still do it, because she's going to start getting up there in age.
She'll be 69 years old at that time, and you know, it's as a person 1 year away from 69, I will tell you, the aches and pains do come, and I'm not the roué that I was when I was even 10 years younger, but that is for another program altogether. But
Larry, it is your age and experience. It is your age and experience that has allowed me to dub you the consigliere of this program.
I want to thank you, Carmine. I want to thank you, Carmine, for your confidence in me.
Yeah. What I do want to do, I do want to play a clip, though. And Larry, you were on the Lost Show, as I call it, from 2 weeks ago. Our last broadcast on WIC that never aired.
Right.
And if you recall, it was a brilliant show. It was a brilliant show, and
it was the best show we ever. I think it was the best show.
It really was, and we're not just saying. All jokes aside,
that was the ground. That was the foundation.
It was.
I trust both of you.
Thank you. It was the foundation to move on to this. But on that show, I played a clip, Larry, if you recall, of Obama's jobs plans, and the fact that there were at least four different ones throughout his tenure in office. I want to replay that clip now just to give the listeners a sense as to what we've been dealing with and the incompetence that we've been dealing with. So if I hit the right button, we can get this going. So bear with me for 1 second.
Okay.
Let's see if we can get this clip going here.
We know people are hurting right now. We need to create jobs and get money into people's pockets right now. We passed the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the most sweeping economic recovery plan in history. Plan to save or create 3.5 million jobs, putting Americans back to work, doing work American needs. Put Americans to work today, building the infrastructure of tomorrow. We should put more Americans to work building clean energy facilities. People out of work. They're hurting. They need our help. I want a job built on my desk without delay. For the last 2 years, we've begun rebuilding from the 21st century. A project that has meant thousands of good jobs for the hard-hit construction industry. And tonight I'm proposing that we redouble those efforts. We'll put more Americans to work repairing crumbling roads and bridges. We'll make sure this is fully paid for. I am sending this Congress a plan that you should pass right away. It's called the American Jobs Act. And everything in this bill will be paid for. Everything. The American Jobs Act is to put more people back to work and more money in the pockets of those who are working. It will create more jobs for construction workers, more jobs for teachers, more jobs for veterans, and more jobs for long-term unemployed. It will provide a jolt to an economy that has stalled. You should pass this jobs plan right away.
Larry, what are your thoughts on all that?
Well, let me begin my comments by telling you about an article that was in today's Wall Street Journal about a $4 billion program that was to go to community banks to be money that was to be lent out to small businesses. $2.2 billion of that money from these community banks that took stimulus money went back, was simply recycled, went back to Washington to pay off their obligations under the stimulus plan, and leaving only $1.8 billion to lend out to the private sector, the small business people. And why is this important? Because the jobs plans that the president creates are job plans and this has been written of and again in the Wall Street Journal that are focused almost exclusively onto the public sector. They don't go to the private sector where small business produces 70% of all jobs in the country, and they go towards what happened under the original $787 billion. And you can talk to EJ McMahon up at the Empire Center, and EJ knows this stuff. Has the stuff cold, they simply postponed a day of reckoning. A lot of these states, and they used the stimulus money, and they counted jobs created as jobs saved. And they're going to do the same thing with this. Now, the infrastructure bank, this guy talks about. We made a mention of this last week. The National Society of Engineers estimates that in order to repair the roads and bridges in this country, the basic infrastructure which keeps goods and people flowing, will cost $147 billion. I think there was $24 billion in the first, $787 billion in Stimulus 1, and in incentive stimulus, this jobs program, there's only $48 billion. But there's $10 billion set aside for a new infrastructure bank. You know, if the president was really serious, and I think infrastructure, I think the country is falling apart, and I think, it would be something, frankly, I would support. It would put a lot of construction guys to work if the NLRB would let non-union construction companies go for the money, which is questionable. But it would put a lot of construction guys to work, and it would enable us, if $147 billion, if that is indeed the true number, would allow us to get our roads and bridges into tip-top shape, which will only help us, with regard to foreign investment and becoming a true market again so that our balance of payments is not, seriously out of whack. So people are, we can ship our goods to them, and they can ship their goods to us, and almost all of the you look at the emerging countries, look at India and China, they're putting tons of money
right
into this stuff because they understand you got to have this, you have to have this stuff. But he has a little over a third. So I mean, the president uses this as the rationale. This is the infrastructure, and you can't be serious. If this was the infrastructure, you would say, and it's $147 billion, okay, we wasted 24, okay, first time around, didn't happen, shovel ready isn't shovel ready, but the 147 is going to be set aside, and I want timetables from the governors of all the states that we're giving this to. And I want this done as economically as possible, which means I want the NLRB to stay the hell out, and I want the low bidder, as long as they're responsible low bidder. Then the states would love this because you don't have to bond these jobs out now. You don't have to incur more debt because you're getting a one shot, which is going to be, these jobs traditionally take months and sometimes a year. You're doing bridges, I mean, it's a couple of years. So,
Larry, it's funny that you talk about China with their currency. A few minutes ago, you mentioned that because there's this huge bill going through right now in the Senate that would try and curtail what China does to its currency with the manipulation of it.
Right.
We all know that Donald Trump ran, his platform, if you will,
right,
his fake presidential platform on China's currency manipulation. But now it seems
right
like the Congress is starting to do something about it. Where do you see this vote going?
Well, they need to do something about it. I mean, there needs to be parity. If we're going to be in a global economy and we're going to be all operating on the same with the same rules, a play here, China cannot be allowed to devalue its currency to gain a substantial kind of advantage over its trading partners. We've lost a lot of manufacturing jobs, and frankly, Trump is absolutely right. This is where I agree with him wholeheartedly. We've lost these manufacturing jobs. They've gone overseas. They've gone into China. They've gone into other emergent markets and economies that are growing because of globalization, and we don't have a fallback position as a result. So they're eating our lunch.
You know what's interesting though is that this bill is having huge bipartisan support in the congressional members. I know Senator Chuck Schumer, who is an avid liberal Democrat, and Lindsey Graham, who is a conservative Republican, both backed his bill. So when
well,
you have
it, you, you need yeah you you've got to. I mean, one way to you know level the playing field, if you will, is to is to stop the mischievous children from the bad guys or however you want to characterize them from pulling this kind of stuff, and then you know perhaps we can bring some manufacturing jobs back. I'm sorry. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I lost you for a minute. You can bring some manufacturing jobs. We can be competitive. We can have manufacturing again in this country because we are on a level playing field. That's easier said than done. I realize that, but it's going to take the cooperation of labor. It's going to take the cooperation of business. It's going to take we need. I've always said. I've said this from the beginning of globalization, a country that doesn't manufacture anything is simply a taking the first step off a ledge of a very tall building. I don't understand it. I don't understand why anyone would believe that if we become dependent on countries for all of our manufactured goods. And something happens in the world that prevents them from either shipping those goods to us, or they become our enemy, or you know, there's a whole host of other scenarios. What do we do?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting, Larry. The bill passed 79-19 in the Senate.
Yeah, I like to know what the 19
huge.
Were.
Yeah, exactly.
The 19. I like to know. I like to see the donor list for the 19.
Right. Right.
Since there is a history of the People's Liberation Army, making donations to Democratic candidates in this, or allegedly, I think you know if you go back to the Clinton Gore years.
Right. Right. Well, listen, I agree with you 100%. If this country, if the U.S. is going to compete at all in this global market. China needs to be controlled somehow with their currency. I had a lot of issues with Trump and him stringing the Republican Party along for the nomination. But in this instance, he is right.
He's absolutely right. He's absolutely right. I mean, you know, it's almost a mantra with him. China is eating our lunch. China is eating our lunch. And he's absolutely right. He can't say it enough. I think people on both sides of the aisle are starting to listen to him. If you start to wonder, you know, with the outflow of manufacturing out of this country and the kind of creativity that goes with it, you know, and we just lost a guy today. Yesterday, Steve Jobs, who I consider to be probably one of the greatest Americans that ever lived, and a guy who is up there with Thomas Alva Edison and Henry Ford.
Well, we were going to talk about that the latter part of the program, just to acknowledge the fact that former Apple CEO Steve Jobs did pass away. He lost his battle with cancer yesterday.
Yeah.
It's tragic to see a man who has implemented so much importance into society with technology that he succumbed to this disease. No question, he was very influential and really played a huge part in the way society, and not only in the country but in the world, communicates with one another.
Well, my point of bringing it was, you know, without people like Steve Jobs. You start to ask yourself what we're importing our food, we're importing our medicine, we're importing. And last week I think I said with it, there's parts of the country importing their coal. We don't have an energy policy. Our manufacturing has fled. If it wasn't for guys like Steve Jobs, what would we have here in Hollywood? You know,
right.
I think this is our our soft white underbelly. I think that America has always been, and I'll give you just an example from my growing up in a small town upstate, and where the expectation was that not everybody was going to go to college, that some people were going to go work in Corning Glass, other people were going to go into the armed forces. You had those manufacturing jobs that were there, and people you went in, my father, my two uncles, my four uncles, my grandfather, they worked their entire life for the company and retired, and raised a family and sent three sons to college. That's gone. In large part, that's gone. And now I was upstate over the weekend. I was up on Rochester or Genesee, right on the border between Monroe and Genesee County. And it's a wasteland. It's desolation. We went up to Niagara Falls in Niagara County, and you look across the river at the Canadian side of the falls, and it's like Las Vegas.
Niagara Falls is a beautiful vacation spot. It really is. I was there several years ago with my family, and it was beautiful. Beautiful place to visit. I will say, though, as much as I am pro-American, the view from the Canadian side is much better.
Well, we did go over there. We looked at the Horseshoe Falls in particular. The view of Horseshoe Falls is spectacular. And I could think of is the Seneca Nation is built this big casino there since the last time I was up there.
I believe there's two or three big casinos up there now on Niagara Falls.
Well, I only saw one, but I didn't see the kind of vibrancy on the American side that I know exists on the Canadian side. And here you have one of the great natural wonders of the world. You have a tourist attraction that is, it's like the pyramids. People want to say, I went to Niagara Falls, I saw the pyramids, I saw the Taj Mahal. And somehow, I don't know who, the state of New York or Niagara County or the city of Niagara Falls, can't get it together
A large part of this is having to do with our leadership. And I want to read you an excerpt that came out from Quinnipiac University, did a poll. And from the article, more Americans than ever say they disapprove of how President Barack Obama is handling his job, a new poll shows. Majority of voters, 55%, told Quinnipiac University that they don't like how Obama is doing his job. That's an all-time low for Obama, according to pollsters. Just 41% approve of the job of the president. The trend isn't good for Barack Obama, Peter Brown, assistant director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute, said in a press release. His disapproval has gone up 9 points since the summer, from 46 to 52% in September to 55% today. A huge swath of Americans, 77%, told pollsters they think the economy is currently in a recession. Just 11% say they think the economy is improving, compared with 44% who say they believe it is getting worse. Now, Larry, I want to get your thoughts on this. His poll numbers are going down like a rock, and it just seems like I don't see a way in which Barack Obama recovers from this unless the Republicans do not put up a formidable opponent. Your thoughts?
Well, I agree with that. I think that Republicans have this almost preternatural ability to snatch victory from defeat from the hands of victory, they I'm worried that they will not nominate a person who will be able to go out on the stage, and so much of this becomes charismatic showbiz, okay, on a certain level. I mean, when you talk to people about, do you like this person, you like that person, and you get the responses back. I don't like the way he looks. He's got a way about him. There's a lot of superficial kind of judgments go on with people in terms of coming to the final conclusion of who they're going to vote for. Much more, I
what
think.
What did you
than,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say. What's your impression of my stern prediction about Rick Perry at the top of the hour?
I think Rick Perry has flamed out, and I think Chris Christie would have flamed out too. I think it almost becomes a. And I'm sorry. I hope I'm wrong. But there seems to be, you know, a
game. You know what,
Larry,
hope you're right, because I don't even want Rick Perry as president. How's that for a statement?
Well, I think that at the end of the day, whoever the candidate is, the objective here is to bring in a new administration, because if we don't, I absolutely shudder for, you know, the fate of this country.
In that same article from Quinnipiac, from Politico about Quinnipiac, the representative of the university stated that, quote, especially troubling for the president is that voters say 49% to 39% that Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney would do a better job on the economy. GOP contender Rick Perry would do only slightly better, voters say, and Republicans in Congress would not be much better. Mitt Romney, the economy has always been his strong point. But it seems, and I was talking about this with Hezzy at the top of the program, he's just not gaining that traction that you would expect a front runner.
No, he's not. There's polls showing Herman Cain tied with him. And I think that Newt Gingrich is coming up. And I said last week in the program that Newt Gingrich is. I went on a big limb and said I think at the end of the day Newt Gingrich is going to be if nobody, you know, new comes in, and that was before Christie and Palin both dropped out. Newt Gingrich was going to be the nominee.
Kezzy, what are your thoughts on Newt Gingrich, whether he makes a push for the nomination? What do you think?
I think he's washed up, and I don't see why he's running again.
Okay.
I just Americans like a winner. They're looking for a winner, and he just doesn't – he's got too much baggage. The problem is that the party's not looking for someone who will come up with salient ideas that will resonate not only with the members of the party – but will also resonate across party lines.
Right.
And we need somebody who is able to find situations that are more temperate, more conservative, more Republican demeanor, but those same concepts should be able also to resonate on the other side of the aisle. And we're not getting that individual.
Well, with all due respect for everything Hezzy just said, I would urge everybody to look at the new contract with America that Gingrich put out, and also remember that he has he's been criticized for this. He has done a lot of work, crossing the aisle with people since he left the Congress. Here's why I in an age of television, in an age of reality television in particular. And if he continues to do well in these debates and continues to shine and continues to be the statesman, and I think he's been all of those things in all the debates, he's the guy that really has been telling everybody, you know what, the enemy is Barack Obama, not Governor Perry or not Governor Romney, and we best keep our eye on the prize. There will be an almost overwhelming desire on the part of the media to see Newt Gingrich and Barack Obama go toe to toe in a debate.
But does Newt have the juice to endure the process?
Well, I don't know. That's a fair question, and that's a good question. I don't know. I know he's coming up. People are taking a second look at him. He's got more ideas out there than anybody. And Cain, listen, I like Herman Cain. I think Herman Cain is a serious candidate, a real candidate. I think I said last week the 999 plan has got to be scored by the CBO. to find out, if it works.
I threw my support around by Herman Cain the minute he announced his candidacy, the minute he announced an exploratory committee, which, for many who don't know, for those who don't know, is the step before you formally announce exploratory committee. Now, the moment he announced that exploratory committee, I knew he was my choice, and he will be my choice. And the fact that he won Florida shows that he's gaining traction. And finally, after what's going to be almost, a year of him being in the spotlight, he's finally gaining the notoriety and the popularity he deserves.
Well, there's also something else in play here, in that people talk about it all the time in focus groups. They like the fact he's not a politician. I mean, politicians are just, they just stink up the joint. I mean, we've gone through anti-politician phases before. Will Rogers made a career out of making fun of politicians, and there were a couple other comedians that did almost as well doing that. They really have become incredibly odoriferous at this time, and I think it's because people just feel so attacked by their government and don't see anybody standing up in the government trying to help them. They just feel put upon. They feel oppressed. And I use that word very, very deliberately. They feel the government is insinuating itself into every aspect of their life, including how much water comes out of their shower stall, how much water goes into their tank of their toilet, there just seems to be no end to this. And it happens on the local level, the state level, and the federal level.
Larry, what are your thoughts on Sarah Palin dropping out? Not dropping out, but not,
I think Sarah Palin becomes a kingmaker. I think it's the smartest thing she's done. I think that Sarah Palin will live to fight another day. I think she'll be very influential. They're all lining up. They want her. They want her endorsement, and she can. I think can really be influential in this whole thing.
Do you think that she will run in the future?
I don't know. I'm one that sort of takes Sarah Palin at her word. I think that I saw this really, really ugly YouTube thing that happened between this guy named Stephen Kramer and her daughter at some bar out in California, where he was cursing out her mother, and they got into a big to-do, and I mean, really vile, ugly language. And I think, I think she's a really sensitive woman. I think she looks at her family, and she says, do I really need this? Do I need to put my family through this? Do I need all of these rumors? They're going to attack me as a woman, as a conservative woman, sexually. They're going to attack me. There is no low. There is no floor. It's bottomless what they will do, and I think she came to a conclusion. A, I don't need it. I we're comfortable. I can make a lot of money. I can be very influential. I can maybe do even more to help my convictions become reality than I could as a president. And she was telegraphing this. She was telling everybody, you don't need a title. She'd been saying this for weeks. You don't need a title to be influential. So I love Sarah Palin. I don't think she could have been elected this year. I think that the media hatchet job was too thorough. I think it's almost criminal what they did to her.
Well, you know,
it's
Larry,
not almost. It is criminal.
Sarah Palin, I think, saved us. I think she saved us from another example of a Rick Santorum, Ron Paul, meaning a candidate who runs but won't win, and it just kind of
let me add in light of what you just said, I think she also can read a poll, and she said, why would I put my family through this, destroy myself maybe in the process, and not win,
right.
And I think You got to have two things when you run for president. You got to have the fire in the belly, and you got to have at least the common sense or a sense that it is possible for you
Larry,
to win.
Larry, let me tell you this though: if Barack Obama is reelected in 2012, I'm willing to bet anything that one, Sarah Palin might be back, and two, I think you're going to see a Chris Christie nomination.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what's interesting, though? What I find really interesting and really pathetic is that where are the men who can show a little bit of chivalry and say, hey, you know,
right. Leave
our lady alone.
Right, and that's what the conservatives have been trying to do. And I know Larry and Frank have been trying to do that on their program. I've been trying to do that here.
We need to do more marketing for Frank and Larry.
Yes.
In order to be able to,
yes,
that to resonate.
Larry, would you like to do a shameless plug for your program?
Well, I want to say today we sent a press release out, and the title of it was Holder Needs to Go and DOJ Needs to Be Investigated. And the press release reminded everyone that on July 16th, 2011, in Nothing But the Truth, along with Second Amendment Mike Timlin, we were the first ones to make the to note that Attorney General Holder's appearance before on May 3rd before Darrell Issa's committee on House Oversight and Government Reform, that his he was asked the question, when did you know about this? And he said, the last 2 weeks. On March 19th, President Obama was on Univision and was asked the question directly, did you or Attorney General Holder authorize this program? And he said neither one of us did. So somebody's lying. And now there's a great new book out. I want to give the guy a plug, and I'm not getting any money for this at all. J. Christian Adams, who was the attorney on the Black Panther voter intimidation case, when he resigned after Holder dropped the case, has written a blockbuster of a book called Injustice, and I got it from on my Kindle last night. I'm halfway through it. I'm telling you, it will make you so angry. It will make you so mad that you will go to the barricades and you will demand a special counsel not only investigate Eric Holder, but the entire Department of Justice, particularly the Civil Rights Division. This is an agency that has been radicalized and is out of control. So we're going to be following this. I believe we broke this story because nobody had made that connection, and we didn't hear anyone make that connection for 2 months. So I'm real proud of that. We did all this stuff was in the public domain, and we just read it and we just put it together. And we say this makes no sense. And,
well, it's a very good program that you and Frank do, and Nothing But the Truth airs on WVOX every third Saturday of the month, and you also have Nothing But the Truth Coast to Coast right here on WVOX.
Coast to Coast on every Tuesday from 2 to 4.
From 2 to 4.
These are the kind of issues that we love to sink our teeth into, and so we hope people will listen, and hopefully they'll find us. Frank is very informative, and I'm mildly amusing. So a good time will be had by all.
Before we let you go, I do want to ask you one final question.
You mean I'm not staying till the end of the show?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, I'm appalled. Oh, at least I can have my dessert. Okay, go ahead.
My show, my call.
Okay.
I do want to talk to you about Solyndra for a little bit. Because it was just announced today that Jonathan Silver, the director of the Energy Department's loan office, has stepped down and sort of became the first victim of this whole calamity in terms of who's going to get
their chopped off. Yeah, the bus keeps rolling through D.C. The bus keeps rolling. A lot of the ATF guys, they got thrown under the bus. Now we're seeing the energy guys get thrown under the bus.
It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
For those who haven't been following up with it, Solyndra was the company in which the Obama administration approved the loan for $535 million to Solyndra, and then everything just turned haywire over the past month or so.
Well, they were given warnings. Because this they were actually looking at this during the Bush administration and concluded that the economics of this country were extremely shaky, and that there was a better than even chance, I believe, that the company was not going to make it. So the loan guarantee that they got, and which they built this wonderful building when it was a great photo op for the president and everything, and the I'm trying to remember the name of the bundler. There was a guy who has is an investor, is one of the shareholders of the company, who prior to the granting of the loan guarantee made 20 trips to the White House, and then the loan guarantee was announced. And this is, Solyndra is not alone. There's others out there. There was one company, and I can't remember the name of it, that was actually in Chapter 11 when they got their award. So, you want to talk about, this goes back to what I said earlier about the ideology and the incompetence, the two eyes.
Larry, this is what, if I can get this clip up, I do want to play what the president had to say on Solyndra, so we're going to play this clip, and I want to get your take on it, okay?
Okay.
Hold on.
When an arena in Louisville gets the funding it needs.
No, we can't get it up. One second. Having some technical difficulties. Larry,
What did he say in the clip? What was the gist of what he said? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Okay, we are back on the air. I do apologize for that. Larry, are you still there?
No, we disconnected him.
Okay.
Do we have Larry's number?
Yes, we're going to try and get Larry back on the line in 1 second. Larry?
What was the question?
Yeah, Larry, if you can do us a favor and call us back at 310-982-4137 or at 877-674-2436. We'd appreciate it. We have a little bit of technical difficulty there with the studio. But we are back on the air. Yeah, I was going to play the piece. We're going to hold off on the piece until we can get Larry back on the line. Hopefully he calls back. Once again, Larry, 310-982-4137 or 877-674-2436. No, we'll have him call here,
okay.
So we'll do that. So I do apologize for that, ladies and gentlemen, but we are back on the air. We have about a little over a half hour left in the program. What I was going to play for you was a clip from Barack Obama defending his actions on Solyndra, but we had a little bit of an issue trying to get that loaded in, so we'll just talk about it instead. The Obama administration approved of this loan for over $500 million, and the company just went haywire, and the loan was proved to be unfitting for the company. Financial issues started to ensue, and this just further proved that faith in our government's financial policies and where we're spending our money is not correct, not accurate, and not safe.
Wasn't it also that the money that was spent was given to somebody who was connected to being a bundler, which means he gathered money and then gave it to the Obama campaign?
Correct. So a lot of it was political.
It was very political.
A lot of it was political.
I can't even imagine that that's an ethical form of conduct.
No, it's not. It's not. I think we have.
Where's Dion?
No, go ahead.
Where are the people who are going to say no? This is not ethical.
But that's the problem, though. The way this country is being run right now, this ethics issue, this morality issue, is thrown right out the window because everybody wants to make a quick buck and wants to prove that they have the almighty dollar in their hands. But if it's not worth anything,
that's the name of the game. I didn't get the memo.
Yeah.
Read Michelle Malkin's book, Culture of Corruption.
Larry, are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, we got disconnected there for a little while. I apologize for that. I was trying to play a clip about. Go ahead.
No, I said you. Everyone, I recommend Michelle Malkin's book, Culture of Corruption. About the Obama administration and the level of corruption that runs through it. It's a really great book. It's about a year and a half old now, but it's still very, very timely.
Right. Now, Larry, do you feel that issues that are occurring with Solyndra, is this basically a sample size of what this nation has been dealing with Barack Obama and his?
I think this is a combination of the lefties doing business Chicago style. They've got it's the rules don't apply to us, and let's grease the skids and let's do it for non-fossil fuels so that we all feel good and we have a green, it's got green graphs, okay? And
right.
Did I just invent something? Hezzy, you're the witness here. I invented the term green graft.
Green grass. I'll remember that one.
Wait, green grass or
green graft?
Oh, graft. Okay.
Graft. Yes. That's what I think. That's what in part what I think it is. It's a mixing of ideology and corruption. And
right.
They play fast and loose with the rules because their cause is just and they're righteous and everybody else is evil. And they have this Manichaean, vision of the world, which is, capital, rich people are evil and capitalism is evil. And they're the good guys so that, they have to break all the rules in order to beat the bad guys. And there's a childlike quality about it. And there's a very frightening quality about it because it's the same stuff that put Mao Zedong in power into China and Joseph Stalin into power in the Soviet Union. And, it's this collectivist nonsense about the people versus the bourgeoisie or the people versus the royalty. And it's been going on since the French Revolution. You read Ann Coulter's book, Demonic, and she'll talk to, the whole first part of the book is about the power of the mob, how the left has harnessed the power of the mob. And that's what you see going on right now. Down in Wall Street, you have
I was going to say, go ahead, finish your point.
No, I'm plugging a lot of people's books today. I hope if I ever write a book, they'll plug mine. But go ahead.
No, I do want to get your take on the firing of Hank Williams Jr. for the Adolf Hitler Barack Obama comparison?
I think Adolf Hitler thing. I think they're horrible, and I don't like to see anybody fired over speech, but I think there's some. I got to tell you, I would be hard pressed if I was the head of ESPN. Whether I would have not done the same thing. I think there are some things that are just,
really?
We've got to stop doing it. We've got to stop comparing people to people like Hitler, to mass murderers. Now, I think the context, let me just say this, and I don't know much about it.
The context is the important thing right here.
The context he said it in was making an analogy. I think it's an unfortunate analogy, and I think that it's probably, I shouldn't even say anything on it because I really haven't thought this through, but I don't like Hitler. I have an aversion to it. Because it's been done so much to conservatives. It's done all the time to conservatives.
Absolutely.
And I just think that there are some things that should be. It's like the N word. It should be taken off the table. Okay, language does have power, and some things just ought to be. People ought to have enough common sense and enough common decency to stop saying these things. And I think what Hank Williams did. And I'm an admirer of his music, but I think he put himself on the level of the same people who do that to conservatives all the time. Bush. I mean, how many posters did we see George W. Bush with a Hitler mustache? I mean, it was almost like there were people out there in the hinterland that thought he had a Hitler mustache. They were so common. And I just think that some of this stuff is just enough already. Enough.
Right. Well, Larry, once again, I'd like to thank you for coming on the program. We always admire your opinion.
Has he buy pizza?
No, he did not, actually.
You weren't here.
Because you weren't here, that's why. I do dub you the consigliere of the program here because you do bring with you a plethora of knowledge. So thank you once again for coming on the program. Great job, always.
It was my pleasure, Carmine. Always a pleasure. And Hezzy, I will see you on Tuesday. I'll see you also, Carmen, on Tuesday. And I hope people tune in to Tuesday from 2 to 4. Nothing but the truth, coast to coast.
And nothing, but that's right, and on WVOX as well, and nothing but the truth.
Yeah, on the 15th. We're on the 15th at 10 in the morning to 11 on WVOX or WVOX.com, 1460 AM if you're in Westchester. Nothing but the truth, I guess not coast to coast. And thanks again, Carmine. It's always a pleasure to come on your show. I have a good time. And you humor me, which is, as I get older, it's very important for us old guys to be humored.
It's endearing. That's right. Hezzy's right. It is endearing, I'm sure, right?
Right.
Larry, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Okay, pal. All right. Take care.
Take care. That was, of course, Larry Allison, our consigliere on the program. I always value his opinion. He always brings a nice mix of comedy but truth. And he's been doing it for so many years, so I always take him at his word, whatever he says in terms of political issues, because he does know what he's talking about, and we like to have him on at least every show to weigh in on several of the issues going on. Have about 26 minutes left in the program. Yes, absolutely.
Program,
right. Right. Once again, this is the Conservative Torch Radio program hosted by yours truly, Carmine Torchetti. We are live on the Block Talk Radio format on WGRN. If you'd like to be a part of the show, please do so. Call in 310-982-4137 or at 877-674-2436. The phone lines are open and they are available to you. And I cannot stress enough how important it is for people to get involved in the current affairs going on in government, because it is these situations that go on in our government right now which allow us to shape everything else going on. without the laws, without the legalization, the legislations that are passed in Congress, in this House, in the Senate, everything else becomes secondary. And this is why it's important for everybody to know who is making the decisions that shape our daily lives and what are the reasons for that decision. It's something that cannot be overlooked. Now, moving on to several other issues, just not minor things, but Congressman Gabby Giffords was in D.C. today honoring her husband who retired from the military, which I thought was a brilliant visual, because it shows that even somebody who has been through the tragedy that she has been through was able to overcome and get through that and to be there for her husband and to show her support and to even, some even consider her running again for her seat in Congress. To go from what happened to her in January to possibly running for office again and making public appearances is truly remarkable and truly a miracle. Kenzie, what were your thoughts on that whole thing right there with Congressman Gabby Giffords?
To be honest with you?
Yeah.
You know, I'm floored because I didn't follow what was said. I'm sorry.
No.
I'm really just totally ignorant of it.
The whole situation with Gabby Giffords and how she's made that miraculous comeback like that.
Oh, that's right. But what was the question now? I'm sorry.
Your thoughts on her making that comeback.
Well, I think it's just wonderful that she's been able to muster all that strength. It truly is amazing, the human experience, where some people succumb to the negativism that they encounter in life and others that are able to surmount it.
Right.
So it's truly a wonderful thing. Her husband evidently seems to love her and she loves him.
Absolutely.
And that was evident when he went on his space travel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
With her acknowledgement before the incident and even after.
Right.
So, and their relationship is evidently very strong, and I guess they help one another through life.
Right.
So they
right.
seem to be very, very good partners.
Right.
And so hopefully she'll be able to function on fully in Congress.
Nicely said, Andy. Thank you. Moving on to Steve Jobs, obviously very I don't want to say.
It took me back when he died.
Really?
Yeah, I was taken
why
back.
Why is that?
I don't know why. I'm not like an Apple geek. But it seemed that we had lost a major, major mind.
Mm-hmm.
Someone of such eloquence, being able to rationalize his concepts and on the structure of the internet,
right?
Of the computer system, the hardware, and is able to conceptualize the use of the internet in order to bring music as one modality. He's able to somehow generate just a sense of greater excellence in the products that he brought forward, and he's mesmerized the world.
I think it's very fitting that while you give this nice tribute to Steve Jobs, you're using your MacBook.
Which was good. It's the first time I've ever used it. I always had a PC before.
Right.
But I was scared about viruses, so evidently I once got infected.
Right.
I
don't want
to go through that scene again.
Right.
But he was a stellar man, and evidently he has impressed society all over the world.
Right.
And he's one of our time.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, if I were around when Einstein was around, I would probably think of him
right.
in those terms. But Jobs evidently was even more powerful.
Well, you know, there was an article on Politico today, and I do want to read an excerpt from it. It's a very good article on just a little excerpt of his life and just how it all surmised. The article starts off, "The passing of former Apple chief executive Steve Jobs marks the end of a storied era in technology that is being mourned from the company's Cupertino, California campus to Washington. Jobs, 56, had a long battle with health problems, fighting back pancreatic cancer, surviving liver ailments, and more, yet kept a signature role with the company even after sickness forced him to formally relinquish his title as CEO. In the passing, he has left a tech titan not only for his iconic iPod, iPhone, and iPad, but also for its ability to captivate even Washington in its tech mystique. The relationship between President Barack Obama and Steve Jobs yielded not only an early iPad for the president, which Jobs said just this week had been a gift from Obama said was a gift from Jobs, but a key, well-respected ally in Silicon Valley and a paragon for the sort of innovation and job creation that the White House seeks to emphasize. Yet Apple's inventions also greatly touched the administration. The White House sought to expand technology supporting official federal email to include the iPad and iPhone, and aides are frequently spotted touting MacBooks and other devices. After news of Jobs' death Wednesday, the president issued a statement that said he was, quote, among the greatest of American innovators, brave enough to think differently, bold enough to believe he could change the world, and talented enough to do it. I would agree with the president on that. Nicely said by the president. I don't usually compliment him, but that was nicely said. And it's true.
Celebrate where it's due, that's all.
Absolutely. You celebrate what you give give everybody their due, and when it's appropriate. And Steve Jobs was a revolutionary, an innovator, somebody who really formed a great bond with technology improvement, and was, I think, the symbol of technology, if you will, in the latter part, the early part of this 21st century.
Well, what was interesting, I think what had taken me aback with regard to Steve Jobs was the fact, first of all, he plugged away practically till the moment he died.
Absolutely,
I mean, what was it, not even 2 weeks that he stepped down as CEO?
Right.
And then that time period, and he would lapse into,
right,
into his demise.
Right.
But what was also interesting and that I found very telling is so that he had the ability to last so long and to focus so much that he was able to eclipse the pain and the trial of a medical trial against him. And but more importantly, he embodied the American culture of the can-do attitude, where he was able to surmount the naysayers around him. He was able to prove others wrong, and he was proven right.
Right.
He was proven to be the most proficient in understanding his realm, in the type of equipment that he brought forward, in the fashion sense, in his almost anal retentive demand for design,
mm-hmm,
and his demand for excellence, which they say he almost tyrannized. Was almost a tyrannical ruler, but people appreciated his desire and his demand for such excellence, and those were the tenets that moved the American dream forward.
Right,
and he was able to see that.
Right,
and what he said, I heard most recently, which was really telling, and he said that you should learn to allow yourself to be concerned about what is your passion,
right,
and not to be subdued or diminished by others who want you to do this, that, or the other, because you need to love what you do, and when you do love what you do, then you can become someone like a Steve Jobs.
Right.
Maybe not as in every way, but certainly you can rise to the top.
Right.
And
right.
It's definitely something that needs to be remembered. Few will bother to heed it because everybody needs to learn their own lessons. But at the end of the day, brilliant.
Right.
Just brilliant.
I would agree. It really caught me off guard. I learned about it last night, as everybody else did. And when I heard about it, I knew he was sick, but it was just, I didn't think it was the point where it would take his life so quickly.
I had no idea either.
And it was a big shock for some. And it really, he will be missed in the technology world and in the innovation world. Somebody who really was a pioneer. So Steve Jobs, dead at 56, rest in peace, certainly will not be forgotten. Before we end the show, we have about 15 minutes left. I do want to get to this. A new poll out did show that President Barack Obama needs to improve his support for Israel. It's something that has been a growing concern for many, in terms of the president's support, and it's something that needs to be addressed. The president in recent months has shown, I'm going to say, a lack of support for the Israeli state. 63% want the president to show full support for Israel. The article from Politico reads, an overwhelmingly majority of voters believe that the president should be a strong supporter of Israel, but are evenly split over whether President Barack Obama fits that bill. Nearly two-thirds, 63%, told Quinnipiac University pollsters that the president should be a strong supporter of Israel, but those surveyed were divided on how Obama has dealt with Israel. 39% say he is a strong supporter of the country, and 40% disagree. Just 20% of those polled say the president should not be a strong supporter of Israel. Voters also disapprove, 48% to 34%, of the way Obama is handling the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Now, 63% of voters in this country, 63% of citizens believe that this president needs to show better support, show some support for Israel. I agree with that 63%. They are our strongest ally. You can even say they're our only ally in that part of the world. And they have taught this country a lot about counterterrorism. They have been a huge, huge supporter of the war on terror because they've been dealing with attacks way before we even came on the scope of being part of the counterterrorism offensive. And for the president to do certain things that he has done, such as suggesting the border redistribution, which would decrease the amount of space for Israeli land, really, really shows a strong, strong resentment. I'm blunt. A strong resentment against Israel. Hezi, what are your thoughts on this? Because I know it's something that has affected a lot of people. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, should point out that I'm an Israeli citizen, and I think it's mind-boggling actually that there's where I put the blame on all of this, which is really interesting with regard to Obama's removing himself from supporting Israel as much as he could. I blame American Jewry, who's been disconnected in their voting pattern,
mm-hmm.
in voting under the Democratic line for candidates that have proven themselves to be deficient. American Jewry didn't always comprehend that if the state of Israel should hit the wall and die or collapse because of whatever, that American Jews would not be so free as they think they can be.
Right.
And certainly, Israel is not going to threaten the United States as the Saudis have and say, well, if you don't do this, we're going to take support from you. And certainly, Israel isn't funding a counterinsurgency against America as has been the case with the Saudis funding the madrasas all over the world. And now they're starting to come to haunt us, not because there's anything wrong with Islam, but it's the what's being taught
right.
in these schools that happens to be anti-West and anti-Israel, but it's mostly anti-West, I think, that it comes for. And it's because the Arab world, mostly the Muslim world, is more interested in just taking the land back.
Right.
In the hope that they can, I don't know what they wanted, but
The Muslims have been searching for a Palestinian state for decades now, and it's created such a huge conflict there.
Well, I don't believe that the Islamic world is really taking care of their own brothers because
yeah.
they didn't need to keep them in tented villages in
right.
in Lebanon for 65 years.
Right, right. And it's become such a huge issue that many have felt that the president. You know, look, many people have often, used the argument that the president is secretly a Muslim.
Yeah, and, but that's not an issue.
But, a lot of people, and I'm not one of them,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of people I've heard have used the argument that he's not showing support for Israel because he might secretly be a Muslim. Whether or not that's the case,
mm-hmm.
you're the president, you're the leader of the free world. We have a known strong ally in that part of the world who has done nothing but support us. Reciprocate it. Show the same type of support back. Don't authorize or bring into popularity or try and give some type of idea of a plan that would decrease Israeli land
mm-hmm.
and go to borders that would put Israeli in extreme, that would compromise their security. You don't do that.
Well, that's really a good point. It's a good question. Why he's moved the way he has.
Right.
I don't know. I really don't know.
Right, right.
I don't know, and interestingly enough, too, who's the guy that was his in the cabinet that he just became mayor of Chicago? I forgot his name.
Oh, Rahm Emanuel.
Rahm Emanuel.
Yes.
Rahm Emanuel also, I think, was either his family or he and his brothers were born in Israel. And I couldn't understand the direction that he helped and
well,
he abetted
exactly.
the president
exactly.
to move toward.
You would think that there would be some type of pro-Israel movement.
No, there are a lot of self-Jew haters out there.
Right.
And sometimes people want to prove themselves to be better than.
Right.
But in this situation, I think it was an atrocious departure from what would have been appropriate for America.
Right.
Look, the Arab world, it may have had its spring, but I don't know where it's going to go. Nobody does. And how do you negotiate even with greater stability when you certainly can't negotiate now.
Mm.
And then you can always negotiate at the butt of a barrel of a gun barrel, or you're going to negotiate while they're SAM missiles directed in your country. I mean, this is insanity. America wouldn't stand for it,
right.
And Israel is not going to either.
Right.
So right now it's a stalemate. But it's going to be very, very important that we move in a direction of some sort of respect for people. And I don't know where we're going to go.
Right, right.
I just don't know.
To thank you for your input, Hezzy. I know from a personal standpoint for you, this means a lot. So thank you for giving
you.
Your input. Appreciate it. Before we close up the show, about 9 minutes left in the program. Once again, if you would, but
quickly, how come it was so smart?
I know.
So good.
I know.
It was really nice.
The time just flies by when you're on the air. But again, if you would like to have your voice be heard, you have about 8 minutes left to do so now. 310-982-4137 or 877-674-2436. Please call in. Let your voice be heard. Any and all topics are open for discussion. But before we close out the show, I do want to get to this. The Occupy Wall Street demonstrations that we talked about with Larry on the phone before,
mm-hmm.
It's come out that Republican presidential candidate Buddy Romer is in support of these protests.
Mm-hmm.
Article from Politico. Buddy Romer has been running for president as something of a man without a movement. His single issue has been to curtail the influence of money in politics, but there doesn't seem to be much demand for a populist uprising around campaign finance. But the former Louisiana governor took an interesting step back toward relevance this week by becoming the lone presidential candidate in either party to speak up strongly on behalf of the Occupy Wall Street protesters. Here's what he told the American conservative blogger Rod Dre today. I think conservatives believe in first principles. They believe that hard work should be rewarded. They believe that this country is great because it's been generally free. And conservatives see that this is disappearing. They see now that a big check can take the place of a big idea. They see now that the structure is not for the base, but it is for the peak. It's for the top 1-2%. They see Wall Street riddling with fraudulent documents. They see it riddled with attitude of let's fire Americans and go overseas. They see it riddled with things that have had and will have had effects on this economy. Now, very eloquently written, Mr. Romer, but what conservative, what Republican conservative candidate for president in their right political mind would support these nut jobs down on Wall Street? Okay? These Occupy Wall Street protesters are nut jobs, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay? But here you have a supposed conservative supporting them. Makes no sense at all. You want to talk about Wall Street being the culprit for why American jobs are going overseas? No. The reason why jobs are going overseas are because Barack Obama and his team of elite liberals are raising the taxes so much and making it such an unfriendly environment for businesses that they're moving elsewhere for cheaper labor and for cheaper products to supply themselves with. By making this country less business-friendly, more of the companies are going to go overseas.
I didn't know who initiated the whole process with regard to big business balking
right.
at returning funds from abroad that they earn abroad. So what ends up happening is that the tax structure permits, let's say, if you earn money in Europe, that the money stays in Europe, because if you brought it back, if you repatriated back to the United States, you would be charged an extremely high tax
right.
on that money made abroad.
Right.
So it's being kept abroad, and you don't keep money from not working. So to put it to work, they hire people abroad.
Right.
They may be less expensive or even more expensive than
right.
our people. But when you take in the onerous tax structure, it's worth for them to even to pay more to get other people from other countries to work the jobs. And what I don't understand, and it doesn't really matter who started this, because it doesn't matter. What does matter now is that we should try to repatriate this money back into the United States. We should work out a system that would maybe will be an inducement
mm-hmm.
for these companies to bring their money here. Because let's face it, unless we induce them to bring the money here, we're not getting any money.
Right.
So we're getting zero right now. So I would rather see a 15% tax on this money coming back, and that might be sufficient to start bringing the money back here. And then what do you do with that money when you repatriate it? You have to put it to work. And then to put it to work, you form the jobs that are able to be paid for with this money.
Right.
So, but there's something, the demeanor of the United States of late has been to not even be concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I question which government, whether it be a Democratic government or a Republican government, has an interest and a concern for the United States.
Well, a lot of
for our people, because our people need to be employed.
Well, a lot of the unemployment is staggering right now. The official unemployment rate is somewhere around 16%. 16 to 17%.
Unofficial. But that's the unofficial rate, which is double what the almost, well, nine something.
9.1, I believe. 9.1.
And then 16%, that's for the white community. When you look at the black community, they're almost double 30. So they're closer to 30%.
And right now we have.
But again, everyone's suffering.
And we have a situation right now where nothing's being done, nothing significantly is being done about it. And you have. And these Wall Street protesters who, you know, by their sheer name, occupy Wall Street,
mm-hmm.
think they're going to make that much of a difference. And they're just hurting the issue. They shut down the Brooklyn Bridge because they got so out of hand. Now, who do you think they're hurting by shutting down the Brooklyn Bridge? They're shutting down regular blue and white-collar Americans trying to get to work on a daily basis.
I think what you see in that whole scenario is frustrated people. But the reason you see a populace frustrated is because the leadership, whoever they may happen to be, from whatever political part of the spectrum they may abide by, they're not bringing these concepts forward. So it doesn't really matter what I think, and God help me for saying that it may not matter what you think either, but it does matter if our elected officials will take the time, find the expertise, bring it together, and form a concept that will work, and tell the American public what their concepts are, just like as what we discussed about bringing in the money,
right.
trying to repatriate the money, and therefore showing the public if we brought the money in, that leave it stale, we would employ other people who are now presently unemployed with this money.
Right.
That's what we need to do. We need the leadership.
We need the leadership. I couldn't agree with you more. We need the leadership. We need the ideas. We need the money. We need the resources. We need somebody to step up at the plate. Somebody in this Republican field needs to step up.
Yes.
And they need to be the leader of this movement to counter the devastating effects that Barack Obama has had on this country.
Quickly, what I don't understand is we don't take ownership. Individuals will take ownership of
right.
their concept so that once it's presented to the public, people will know, yeah, it was Mr. Christie that said it, or Ms. Palin that said it,
right.
or President Obama.
Get the message
said
out there.
Get it out there.
Get the message out there, please. It is your responsibility. It is your duty. You have the ability to do so. Please utilize it. That is going to do it for us. The second show here. I would like another hour, too. www.theconservativetorch.com is the website. This episode will be available for download by later on tonight. Please go to the Facebook and Twitter pages for more information, and please follow those pages for more information. Once again, www.theconservativetorch.com. I would like to thank Larry Allison, our consigliere on the program, for his great analysis. Thank you, Hezzy Arish, for your input. And please go to the website. Be safe and be well.
That's terrific.